This summary will cover hearsay exceptions, including past recollection recorded, and will compare that exception with the concept of present recollection refreshed. The summary will cover the former testimony exception to the hearsay rule. First, let's look at past recollection recorded. This exception falls within Rule 803, and the requirements are, first, a memo or record concerning a matter about which a witness once had knowledge, but now has insufficient knowledge. And finally, the memo or record must have been made or adopted by the witness when the matter was fresh in the witness's memory, and must also reflect correctly the witness's knowledge. If all of these requirements are met, then the record may be read into evidence. But it may not be shown to the jury unless requested by the opposing party. The idea is that to show it to the jury would perhaps give it too much weight. Notice this exception applies even when the declarant is testifying in court. Now, don't get this confused with present recollection refreshed. The requirements for present recollection refreshed are much broader or much more liberal. First of all, anything can be used to refresh a witness's recollection after the witness indicates that he or she cannot recall the matter. Then, the witness can testify once his or her memory is jogged. In the Riccardi case, witnesses were shown the list from the indictment. Remember, anything can be used to refresh present recollection. Now, once the witness has said he or she cannot recall the information and has been shown the list, then the witness may indicate that his or her memory is jogged so that the witness can then testify. So, with present recollection refreshed, the witness's testimony becomes the ultimate evidence. The record is not read. Compare this again with past recollection recorded. The traditional application of that exception is discussed in the Fisher case, with the list of 100 items used to assist the witness in testifying. The traditional rule was that it could be read, but not admitted into evidence. The Fisher court said, "This seems like somewhat of a legal fiction." And in Fisher, the court actually admitted the writing into evidence. But under the federal rules of evidence, the record would not come into evidence unless requested by the adverse party. So, to summarize, the difference is this. The idea of past recorded recollection is that the information from the record is ultimately read into evidence, even though the record itself is not admitted. With present recollection refreshed, that is not the case. The evidence in connection with present recollection refreshed is the live testimony of the witness, not the record. Now, let's look at the first of the exceptions under Rule 804. These require that the declarant be unavailable. Let's look first at the former testimony exception. What does it mean to say that the declarant must be unavailable? Well, unavailability can arise from death, illness, a valid claim of privilege, a refusal to testify, or from a simple absence from the area that cannot be cured. For example, as we saw in the Bolin case, a person exercising a Fifth Amendment privilege may be unavailable. However, where the defendant exercises his Fifth Amendment rights in order to avoid testifying, the defendant is not considered unavailable and cannot invoke the former testimony exception in order to admit his own grand jury testimony into evidence. In Bolin, the defendant also invoked the rule of completeness, which we learned earlier in the Beach case. But admission of the defendant's additional grand jury testimony was not needed to avoid misleading the jury, the court held. We also saw another situation where the witness was not unavailable for purposes of this exception. A doctor who gave former testimony and who lived in Nebraska, in the Kirk case, was not unavailable when no one contacted him or tried to get him to come to court. There is a requirement that the party against whom the testimony is offered had an opportunity and similar motive to cross-examine at the prior proceeding in a criminal case. So, in a criminal case, it must be the same party who had that opportunity. Our example here was the Salerno case, where the defendant subpoenaed two witnesses who took the Fifth Amendment at the time of trial, but had previously testified in the grand jury. Defendant wanted to use their grand jury testimony at trial. The issue was whether the government had the same motive to cross-examine the witnesses in the grand jury. The court indicated this was not clear and said that the government may not have had the same motive to cross-examine witnesses in the grand jury as it would at trial. In a civil case, this is much broader. The requirement there is that either a party or a predecessor in interest had a motive and opportunity to cross-examine the witness in the prior proceeding in order for the former testimony exception to apply. Here, the civil action refers to the one in which the former testimony is being offered. Our case example for this was the Clay case, where the court held that the predecessor in interest requirement should be broadly construed so that a defendant in an earlier case in which the doctor was deposed was considered a predecessor in interest to a defendant in the present civil litigation. You should note that California does not have this predecessor in interest requirement. Only a similar motive is required. That's the end of this hearsay summary for Part 5.